Okay, welcome, friends. I don't know what is more important in this time of so much uncertainty than coming together for conscious community, just coming together for the fields we co-create through practice. I see some of you who are familiar to me and many who are new. So wonderful to be here with you in this moment. And I want to first thank Sangha Live. I've taught with Sangha Live for many years and love this community. I want to express gratitude for the place holding me today. I'm in Santa Barbara, California, on Chumash land, being sheltered temporarily by Sangha. Gratitude to all of the land holding all of us. And I see a diversity of places across the globe. So, really appreciate this coming together. I also want to express gratitude for 8 months after Hurricane Helene dissolved everything in my life as I had known it, home, belonging, the community my husband and I were anchored in. Nearly took our lives. Both of us miraculously lived. Just gratitude for the basics, like clothing that I have to wear and equipment that I have to teach on. Everything has been gifted to help us get through these times. I'll note these sunglasses, which are also my reading glasses, which from time to time I'll put on, not to bring the potential distance of sunglasses into a space, but the glasses that were given to me to be able to read again were also sunglasses. It's all part of the hurricane recovery, okay? So, as we move into today's session on the Dharma of displacement, finding sacred ground amidst groundlessness, I want to ask each of us to take in a deep breath together and to just begin to touch, to dip our toes in to this topic, collective uncertainty, collective displacement, the bearing witness to an acceleration of displacement across our globe right now. And the simultaneity of ways that you personally might be experiencing displacement, as am I, and beyond the physical, the psychic displacement of so much changing in our world all at once. So I'm grateful that we can explore this topic together today. As Marnie shared, I'll guide us in a meditation, share some Dharma reflections, and then open it up to group exploration. And inquiry is really one of my favorite aspects of teaching, being in the moment together, you sharing your voice and following your curiosity and what we co-create together. Okay? Before we get started, I want to presence that one of my great teachers, about 30 years now, Joanna Macy, who Marnie presenced. I'm dedicating my practice to Joanna today and asking that we all hold Joanna in our prayers. On Friday the 13th, she broke her hip and has been in quite a recovery that was feeling hopeful and finally got to go back home to complete her recovery, and then things took a turn for the worst. And it's not looking good right now, and our prayers are needed, and my heart feels really, really tender, really tender. You know, even though we all know and understand impermanence and the first noble truth, the tenderness we feel whenever our shared vulnerability through our loved ones, loss and changes. So to presence Joanna. And I think it's important you know, Joanna has such an extraordinary voice of a poet. And so to start us off with a short excerpt in Joanna's voice. I live my life in widening circles that reach out across the globe. I may not complete this last one, but I give myself to it. I circle around God, around the primordial tower. I've been circling for thousands of years, and I still don't know. Am I a falcon, a storm, or a great song? Please allow yourself to just take that in. As we move into our formal practice, which I'll be doing standing today to take care of this body, and you can do sitting or standing, whatever position feels kind today and permits you to rest fully in presence. I want to invoke the spirit of Kuan Yin, Bodhisattva of compassion, translated to she who hears the cries of the world. This is so much my experience of Joanna, and so much the frame for how we will hold the Dharma of displacement today. Please, resting now in a posture of dignity, softening your gaze or allowing the eyes to close, beginning by taking in together as we ground and relax into the support of gravity, the earth below. Let's take in three of the deepest and slowest breaths we've taken today. Riding your breath all the way to the top and all the way back down again, inviting relaxation. Please check in with the body, making any subtle shifts that are needed to feel even more grounded and settled as we move into a period of stillness. In Zen, to sit immovable like a mountain, Kekafusa is one of the invitations offered by Ehe Dogen, 12th century founder of Soto Zen. Immovable like a mountain, pointing to this spacious open, resting curiosity that welcomes life as it is. So connecting gently with breath and body as anchors, beginning to rest into the field that can welcome you exactly as you are in this moment, that welcomes life exactly as it is. Aware of your own process of beginning to settle. Dogen invited us both to meet each moment with beginner's mind, open, spacious curiosity, while simultaneously meeting our practice as Buddha under the Bodhi tree in the moment of awakening. Just reminding us quite simply that our practice is not based on some day. It is about liberation now. This is it. And so as we rest here together, I invite you to soften effort, just allowing breath to breathe you, allowing body mind to integrate. Allowing awareness to organically expand with each breath we take. Nothing to do or make happen. Nowhere to get to. Nothing to solve or change or fix. To rest in intimacy with what is, to be intimacy with what is, non-separation. just softening, surrendering. If you look, you won't find any separation between the breath breathing you and the organism of your own living body. No real separation between this body and the space surrounding. Like a mountain ecosystem, steady, still. Equanimous, while holding space for the entirety and diversity of all the living systems that birth with it and through it. And so as we continue and enter a period of silence, let's be aware of all that arises and passes, all that is ever changing. Thought, emotion, sound, vibration, energy, while equally being aware of that which is unchanging. Awareness itself. I'll remind us that meditation is not about what we get, but what we let go. Just continuing to soften, to surrender to the moment. What Dogen spoke of poetically as falling into eternity, moment by moment, the collapse into eternity, letting body, mind fall away. letting it fall away, whatever it is. Well, feeling yourself, capital F, supported by this fall, by this falling away. Supported in and through this surrender. See if you can surrender 10% more. Falling away. Please gently allow your breath to deepen now. And a couple more deep, spacious breaths down into the belly. Before we bring our formal meditation to a close, if you'd like to rest a hand on heart or belly or both, please do so. And let's take a moment collectively to offer loving kindness, compassion, reassurance to ourselves internally. Just showering whatever expression of kindness, care, offering of truth emanates from your heart in this moment. Giving and receiving love. I think this is the expression of authentic power. Shared power rather than power over, which is something Joanna liked to point to. And as I am without a bell today, let's take in one more conscious breath together, inhaling and fully release. When you get down to the bottom, empty, please very gently allow eyes to open and take a soft gaze up at the horizon before returning your eyes to the screen, please. Palms together. Friends, I think I could have continued to just sit with you for a couple of hours. The stillness felt so rich. And there's quite a bit I want to invite us to explore today. So let's dive right in. First, I'll share that as I'm dedicating my practice to Joanna Macy today, as we pray for her recovery and for her rest through whatever process she is divinely engaged in right now. I want to share my conversation with her on the last visit we had. And it went something like this. After dropping together into deep, fertile listening, stillness, grace, she said, "Eden, I am feeling so full of wonder and awe and excitement about how death will greet me, about how my life will be taken as I'm in the final phase of my life." She said, "I feel excited because I have never experienced that kind of death in this life." And so full of childlike wonder, full of awe, she used the word excitement, like the great teacher she is. She touched the topic of her own death. So in this teaching, I reminded us of, in meditation, meeting each moment as our meditation, each moment in beginner's mind, and simultaneously, Buddha under the Bodhi tree, liberation now, this weave of the innocent, curious child, the awe inherent in that, and a deeper knowing of the wise elder who holds the bigger picture. This is really my hope for how we can hold the Dharma of displacement and this age of extreme radical uncertainty. If everyone can pause and just consider in your own heart and mind any personal experiences of displacement that you are moving through now, and your own experience of bearing witness to what's happening collectively, the psychic disorientation and psychic displacement for all of us as we experience the great unraveling, another term that Joanna created, which when I first met her around the age of 20, clarified so much for me and brought me a great peace, because what I was bearing witness to around the world I had inherited as a young person and my own experiences of grief, having lost my father to cancer, navigating grief in a world that seemed to shun and numb out grief rather than embrace and turn towards, the great unraveling brought me a whole lot of peace. The rightness of being to systems that were not designed to affirm and fortify life, to be unraveling slowly and right now in an accelerated way. While I first met Joanna then, I reconnected deeply with her after my 7.5 years at Silent Monastery, in a chosen period of absolute displacement. So personal displacement that came from the wild transition of moving from monastic in Silent Monastery in the wilderness to living out in the world as a lay practitioner and teacher. The pioneering experience of that, the complete unknown, that the insecurity of living without my spiritual community intact at my side. And Joanna was core in that period to showing me and modeling for me the seed of an even more expressive, even more generously expressive phase of my practice that she modeled so beautifully as an engaged Buddhist teacher living and teaching amidst all of the isms, the collective shadows we're facing today so brilliantly. Okay. So what I'd like to first present is the first noble truth, impermanence. Anicca, we all know impermanence so intimately, so well. Impermanence has been the sacred fire under the core of my practice for 3 decades now. The sacred fire calling me forth, calling me to show up in a particular way with intention, moment by moment, pointing me to, in the face of all will be lost, what is my choice right now from the depth of my being? And still, when we have these experiences like I'm having of going through complete dismemberment of my life as it was, or the grief I'm feeling towards the potential loss of a teacher, we have to keep it real and know how to wholeheartedly take care of and honor the experience of the human while recognizing the invitation of what it means to dance with groundlessness, to embrace the ultimate groundlessness. I want to read a short excerpt from a blog that I wrote at the end of the year. And so to share, it was the very end of September last year when one day we woke up expecting a storm like other storms we had had, without knowing that as internet had gone down in the night, the storm had shifted courses in the middle of the night and was making our region the absolute bullseye epicenter. And so when I watched a storm come through and quite quickly take our entire lives down, neighborhood down, we were in the mountains where we were then trapped for the next week, it was witnessing nature's might to a degree that I had never imagined, even though I've been a student of the polycrisis, of climate crisis, since a very young person. And there is a loss, an absolute beauty, a divine responsibility that especially all of us who have the gift of practice that can be called forth and fortified through what we're bearing witness to, and also that our medicine, the medicine of this practice, is needed. So there was phase one of navigating the immediacy, being trapped on the mountain, being rescued after a week by a Buddhist chaplain who modeled for me the opportunity we all have through our practice to be of service in these times, because the quality of gentle attunement, deep listening, and compassion that this bodhisattva brought to us was the only energy I would have wanted to be met with in that level of trauma. There was then phase two, which was kind of an altered state, an expanded state for my husband and I and for everyone in our community for months of having a near-death experience and witnessing an entire region change so abruptly. I had never witnessed, for instance, a war zone with my own eyes, but it was an absolute awakening, which I'll talk about today. And then the third phase, which we're in now, which feels a little bit like when someone you love has died and there's almost an expectation after some time that the grief must be lessening, that it's time to be getting back to normal. I have all of my plate of Dharma responsibilities alongside the busyness. There are so many things to do still in terms of interacting with bureaucracy and navigating the dissolving of what was and the recreation. So this period feels challenging because there's almost an expectation of normalcy, if that makes sense to people. I keep going back to the Rumi poem, "Don't Go Back to Sleep." Okay? So this excerpt, "Every time life strips away that which is human-made and puts me in touch with the distilled nakedness of being human without the external trappings we've come to assume are dependable, I feel a glimmer of freedom alongside the jolt of loss. I recognize the truth of zero as our home base. zero as emptiness, groundlessness, the nakedness of this human experience and the freedom of that. There is nothing external that we can rely upon all the time, nor that can save us from our vulnerability as human beings. We can spend a lot of time investing in preparation and investing in fears that take us entirely away from the only thing worth investing in, the present moment, ground zero, groundlessness. The hurricane experience also put me even more deeply in touch with compassion and solidarity for displacement as a collective experience. The increasing number of beings displaced on planet Earth right now, from climate refugees to refugees of war, to homeless, those who are incarcerated, children who are displaced throughout the child welfare system, animals displaced by desertification and other ecological phenomenon, the forced, violent displacement and deportation of what will be millions of immigrants in the United States. I just want to pause and ask people to present the vastness of this. In my Sangha, I'm receiving an email once a week from someone who has had the trauma of witnessing an unmarked car pull up when they're out in public, men dressed in black and masked, come and scoop up, take, steal someone from their lives through this violent deportation that's going on. So we have a thread in our Sangha of what to do, what can someone do in the face of witnessing ICE in action, okay? Norman Fisher has, Zen teacher Norman Fisher, has a really simple saying that I think is brilliant, which all of our practice can be distilled down to one purpose. Not making things worse. Not making things worse. Just feeling the humility in that. In the wake of so much disorientation and change, it could be easy to go to reactivity, easy to go to fear mind and wanting to feed the dramatization of fear mind, to polarization, to othering. I have seen this too, even in my local community in North Carolina, alongside the benevolence and generosity and bodhicitta spirit, which has been permeating that region. So one of the ways that we practice not making things worse is remembering ourselves as the stillness of the mountain, inviting our fearful parts, our anxious parts, our rageful parts, into the steadiness of that mountain. Grounding again and again in the present moment, even knowing the ground beneath us is moving continuously. I feel aliveness and joy alongside my exhaustion, friends, at having moved and packed a bag more times than I had ever imagined over the past 8 months, and having more unknowns in my personal life, at watching my husband lose his life's work, much or most of it, as a flower essence maker, plant medicine healer. And not long after our loss, after leading a retreat in California, our plane was on the tarmac waiting to take off, and we heard gasps from the back of the plane, and there was the start of the Palisades fires in California. Having grown up in LA, that was a scene I had never imagined, that much smoke penetrating those mountains. And through those fires, my brother has been displaced, my cousin has been displaced, Sangha members have lost everything. So This is just a tiny, tiny sliver. When we move it out to the war zones on our planet right now, to what's happening, Gaza, Sudan, Ukraine, Iran, I mean, we could just keep going. Meditation, as a way of life, teaches us to anchor in source, even when there's no solid ground beneath us. We have a choice in every moment to let go of every shiny, colorful object, thought, distraction, and identification that takes us further away rather than closer to our connection with source. And we can start exactly where we are, right here and now, with life as it is. Pema Chodron says, if you're invested in certainty and security, you are on the wrong path. Our spiritual practice prepares us more than anything I know for what is happening today. Just to have a practice is to leave the familiar shore. To leave the familiar shore, just notice how those words touch or relate to you without knowing yet where the next shore might be, to venture into the unknown ocean of emergence, trusting life. It's learning to trust life. I'm not pointing to any kind of spiritual bypass or premature transcendence, but that we are willing to venture out into the unknown, radically present, practicing presence, okay? So in order to do this, we have to be willing to turn towards and embrace wholeheartedly the grief that arises alongside displacement. When I think of being a young person, a child of 11 who first experienced my first displacement when my dad died of cancer, finding out one day that he had 1 month out of the blue left to live, but watching him bring his life to graceful closure as a contemplative Christian, that was an experience of displacement that felt lonely, and lonely in terms of guides to be with grief. What I now know, and one of the gifts of this practice and of Joanna, has been the gift of turning towards grief, of recognizing grief as the other side of love, recognizing grief as a sacred expression of our interconnection, and acknowledging that we need to metabolize grief to really intentionally hold space for it. There's a quote I want to read by Christian theologian Serene Jones, who says, to move from grief to mourning is to move from a place of sheer loss to a place of acknowledging the loss and mourning, the permanence of the loss. It can't be fixed, but also it creates a space in mourning for you to make sacred the pain so the rest of your life can be transformed by it. So that in composting our grief, which means turning to reality and facing it, being with the grief, being a vessel for it, we are informed and we show up even more aligned with, we would say with bodhicitta, even more aligned with a fierce compassion to show up in honor of life, moment by moment, day by day. Another quote I'd like to read from Luminous Darkness, to point us a bit more to the invitation of uncertainty, okay? The invitation of not knowing, of having so much, as we knew it, dissolve, be washed away. This is from Luminous Darkness. As our world changes, physically and socio-politically, as more and more people are displaced, and millions will be friends just through climate crisis, or feel uprooted by the omnipresent insecurity of global uncertainty, we crave home. Home is not a physical place. Home is wholeness, the field that unifies. We crave the non-dual reality to which we all belong, the unifying field. That's the refuge of presence. Presence. Again, the stillness of a mountain that is immovable, the mountain ecosystem welcoming so many diverse forms of light into that steady stillness. I believe we longed for greater depth and for knowing ourselves as part of the interdependent web of nature's intelligence. We long for an alternative to the hyperactive, hyper-urban, and suburban consumer lifestyle. We long for balance and belonging, for the quality of presence that proves nothing is separate. So I want to share a poem by Shivani Beyond David. I recently have had the privilege of co-teaching a course offered through, some of you might know, Tanisara, the Sacred Mountain Sangha, a course on liberation spirituality with a number of teachers collaborating, and this poem was shared in that context. Everyone is watching for the collapse, waiting for skyscrapers to fall, banks to crash, governments to burn. But the real collapse, it happened already, is the collapse of intimacy, of community, of our capacity to feel. We scroll instead of speak. We ghost instead of grief. We numb instead of notice. This isn't the beginning of an end. It's the middle of a long, slow forgetting of how to relate, how to touch with our caretaking, how to stay present without performing. Maybe what's crumbling isn't just the world out there. It's our ability to be with the world at all. The work now to remember, to resensitize, to rebel by feeling, that is the work now that we are within. So just notice how that touches you. This points to the radical invitation of displacement. Are we being displaced, or were we already displaced? And what's happening is accelerating the invitation to be in the process of coming home, to come home. An invitation for a more radical growing up. Like what I witnessed in Hurricane Helene and my experience, it just dissolved any facade of separation, that distance that people, even in friendships and neighbor relations, might have held, that slim overlay over consciousness that perceives through separation. It allowed for this collapse into eternity, collapse into intimacy, collapse into the long view together. One of my teachers, my original Zen teacher, Sherry Huber, used to say, you will be asked, you will be required in this path to let go of everything, to let go of everything. And as a young person in my 20s, I remember misinterpreting that. I remember holding fear and tension around that. It took me a bit, and it's a continual process. But this letting go of everything. At that point, I was living as a monastic with a shaved head, having let go of all my belongings consciously. Now as a lay teacher, lay practitioner out in the world, in relationship, running a nonprofit, living in this world but not of the world, I say. But the teaching becomes ever more clear. You will be asked to let go of everything. It's a letting go of anything being perceived as I versus you, as I and mine rather than we, as I as in separate. It's a dropping away continually of personality and a recognition instead of the invitation to engage in everything in our lives through essence. Having a committed relationship with the partner based on essence rather than personality. There will only always be suffering through personality that overlay it. How we've each individually chosen to see ourselves in survival. A hurricane or climate event strips away every facade, and the accelerated loss that we're seeing can strip away the facades that exist in keeping us maybe just slightly comfortable, slightly numbed out, perhaps. I see a big psychic numbing in our world that seems to be cracking. So we can joyfully remember the naked truth that we're in this together, that we're in this together, that there is no time to waste being other than who and what we actually are. No time to waste and more energy and resources than we know internally to support those who are most vulnerable in the wake of displacement. This is one of the things I really hope people will lean into in your own practice. As vulnerable as we all feel, bearing witness to change, how can we offer our hearts in loving support to those who are most vulnerable in a more courageous way, a more radical way? It's kind of that energy of witnessing so much, dissolving at once. What is there to lose from radical kindness? Yeah. One of the great privileges of this lifetime has been having parents who were activists and watching my parents when I was a kid, and we were poor and did not have a lot of resources ourselves. But my mom took on a lifelong work in LA's Skid Row that extended out eventually globally to an inquiry from the heart into how to address systemic homelessness. They would regularly take kids who were most vulnerable into our home. Just take kids into our home because they knew our home was a kinder place. Our home was just a little more safe. We didn't have a lot of space. We couldn't always afford groceries, but we had just a little more kindness there than they knew those kids did. And that modeling, that was all the seed I needed for Buddhist practice. All the seed I needed for what it means to shift from I to we. To know that we are this we. Groundlessness. The empty space between the mycelial network of relationship, which is the backdrop of every moment. It never leaves us. We might leave it, giving our attention to the mind of separation instead, but it never leaves us. So being willing to let our personal practice help us to befriend this spacious, fertile, unknown, to help us to befriend liminality, to help us to pause more often just to spend time willingly and intentionally in the liminal. Limen from Latin, the space between, threshold between. This is a fertile place, the place where life is not scripted, it's unscripted, empty-handed, and so much room for possibility for creating anew, for conscious choice, emptying to let ourselves be used as vessels for life, in service to life. But we have to be willing to befriend the darkness, the unknown. So let's take in a deep breath together. I want to bring my reflections to a close by bringing Joanna's spirit in again. And first, I'd like to read a Rilke poem that she loved so deeply. Joanna has been an incredible Rilke advocate. And every time I go to visit Joanna, she will pull a Rilke book off the shelf and read the poetry of the moment, okay? And so this poem, many of you will know, so beginner's mind. Quiet friend who has come so far, feel how your breathing makes more space around you. Let this darkness be a bell tower, and you the bell. As you ring, what batters you becomes your strength. Move back and forth into the change. What is it like, such intensity of pain? If the drink is bitter, turn yourself to wine. In this uncontainable night, be the mystery at the crossroads of your senses, the meaning discovered there. And if the world has ceased to hear you, say to the silent earth, I flow. To the rushing water, speak, I am. That's from Sonnets to Orpheus. And I would add to the still mountain, I remember. Okay? To conclude, there was a beautiful teaching Joanna offered a while back called The Five Gifts of Uncertainty. And it was really about the gifts, the treasure of uncertainty, seeing it in this generous light. And Joanna liked to come up with things in fives because then you could remember them on one hand. She is practical and always has a sense of humor, okay? So the first gift of uncertainty is the gift of the present moment. This is what we've got. This is it. And so how do we choose to cherish, to express, to relax into, to be intimate with this moment? The second was the gift of fresh recognition of the power of intention, so that in this unscripted moment, in the unknown, in the space between, in the darkness, we can reach in and bring forth our power of intention even more clearly, directly. For me, the animal that has come to mind as I've navigated my journey is the mountain goat, who takes very intricate steps, one step at a time, up incredibly steep mountains, and just takes a step, delicately places their feet down, settles in, ground, before taking the next step. It's one delicate step at a time, one precise step at a time. That's what Zen training has been for me, okay? Three more. The gift of befriending our pain and the great mystery it brings us. Befriending our pain means to befriend collective pain, means to befriend our heart, means to become even more compassionate with all beings, giver and receiver, okay? Fourth, the gift of our solidarity with all relation, the gift of we are in this together. Every time we have uncertainty, vulnerability about anything, we can pause and bring that awareness in. How many other people on planet Earth right now, living beings, are experiencing this? And lastly, the gift of an immensity of time and our true age and the long view or deep time. And maybe with some of what's happening collectively, remembering that emergence is the organizing principle of Gaia, of life on Earth, okay? One final quote from Bio Akomolafe, who some of you might know and love as much as I do. In the midst of a beautiful poetic piece he wrote, these lines popped out at me. And maybe, just maybe, in the midst of smoke and myth, we'll learn that sanctuary is not a place, but a practice, a way to become with the world that is never not broken, never not broken. Find refuge in that, okay? Thank you, everyone. Thank you for listening. This is the time when, if there are reflections you have, if there are questions arising from your heart, we would love for you to bring them in. And I'm really happy for people to come on screen for some in-the-moment conversation, and you can also post questions. But the space is open. So just pause. Noticing how what I've shared has touched you, moved you, invoked questions perhaps. Someone asked me to, repeat the Bio Akomolafe. So maybe, just maybe, in the midst of smoke and myth, we'll learn that sanctuary is not a place, but a practice, a way to become with the world that is never not broken. Finding sanctuary moment by moment, yeah? And I see a hand. Sam. Welcome.
Hello. First of all, really thank you for that teaching. That was really interesting for me. And I'm going to try to express my ideas as best as I can because it's my second language, English. But
Take your time.
Thank you. But yeah, it really, really touched me because I feel displacement is something that's really dominating my life. I would say because I'm a second generation immigrant, my parents are from Haiti. They had to leave the country because of political circumstances. And, you know, they did everything they could to raise a family in Canada, and grateful for all the efforts. But I feel like Haiti is kind of like that mystery country, that mythical space I always want to come to because my parents always want to come back there, even though it's really difficult. You know what I mean? So I feel like the concept of home is really difficult for me because I never really do feel like I'm at home. And to find, you were talking about grief, and I really found it interesting how grief can help, you know, deal with the feeling of displacement because things will never be how it used to be. So you have to focus on the moment, the present moment. And I really enjoyed the five tips that you gave at the end too, because it does help me see displacement in a healthier way, because there are gifts to uncertainty. And yeah, so thank you for that. And then I was thinking Because regarding my relationship with my family and my story, I do feel like I always had a, how can I put it? I'll try. But my relationship with solitude has been kind of interesting for me because since I never had that feeling of home, I always tried to find home within myself. But sometimes that feeling can also feel like avoidance. And sometimes I would be daydreaming of just going somewhere that I don't know, just be a monk for life. And then you were talking about your retreat of 7 years in silent. And I really found that interesting because it kind of resonated with the imaginary I have in my head. And then I'm also in the point in my life where I'm trying to learn that going so far away without nobody is not necessarily healthy because you do need people in life. You do need the we. And I just wanted to ask you a question. During that retreat that you did, what is the biggest lesson that you took from that? And what are the gifts of that retreat? And maybe what are the limitations that you took from that experience too? Just so I can put my mind into, the experience I have and maybe what I think I understood from yours, if I'm making sense.
You're making great sense, and I
Phew,
so
thank you.
appreciate the generosity of your share, Sam, and I really feel and hear your heart in it. And just want us to pause for a moment and feel in our hearts our compassion for, again, all who feel displaced and for the experience of never or rarely even touching what home feels like, what having a place feels like. Let's acknowledge the great privilege in today's world of actually having a home, and that's physical and metaphorical, a place that feels like we belong. Let's acknowledge the privilege of that, okay? And the uniqueness of that. And then the invitation of our practice. This is a practice of belonging ourselves where we are. This is a practice of belonging one another into the field of connectivity, which is invisible. We can't see it, we can't touch it, but it is always here. This is a practice of listening deeply enough to the invisible that we are in touch with that field of belonging, of inclusivity, of all welcome, where we go. And that becomes sort of like home as a verb, sanctuary as a verb. My hands are moving, like we can be moving around, but this stillness of home as a verb is alive. Okay. Then you asked about my time at monastery. And Sam, to be very honest, that would be a whole 2 hours at least Dharma talk in itself. But in this moment, I can say the teaching I reminded us of today, the Zen saying, this is it. This is it. This moment is what we've got. It's all we've got. And this moment is our greatest opportunity. Going back to the teaching of Dogen, that we're meeting this moment because every moment is our meditation. Life is always in meditation. It's our job to just remember that, to sense into the meditation of life that is already innate. We do that through this balance of absolute beginner's mind, of the childlike wonder. I love that heart, that archetype, with the simultaneity of Buddha under the Bodhi tree, like trusting our direct experience as guide. Life is ready to wake us up to interbeing in a million ways, moment by moment. It's about the gift of our attention. The quality of our life experience is determined by the focus of our attention. And so, in any moment, our attention can either be fully here or wandering off with the mind of separation. And that's a very simple sort of invitation of practice. I also want to offer a wonderful book and fortunately, I can't remember the full name, but Zenju, Ursuline Manuel, who some of you might know, a wonderful Dharma teacher, wrote a great book about sanctuary, about home, which might be a fun one to pick up. And when it comes to going on retreat, after a retreat, folks after those years, and I stepped back into the world again, living in the world, but not of the world. That next phase for me of practice was wildly, unimaginably fertile and growthful. I do not believe we need to, in this day and age, go away to the cave, to isolate, to awaken. We wake up together, not in isolation. So I truly believe your life exactly as it is, wherever each of you is, that is the greatest portal. But we also need periods of going on retreat, of deep contemplation. And I see retreats not as a getting away from life in order to deepen, but a training ground for what we can then bring back in our deeper awareness and clearer seeing to the world as it is. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And thank you. And maybe can you still repeat the name of the author? Maybe I'll try to do my research to find
Zenju,
the book.
Zenju Earthlin Manuel. And if anyone else knows the book,
yes, put
it in the chat box. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Who else can raise your hand, or you can write a question in the chat? And I see some great resources in the chat box. And someone asked if I could say a little bit more about the gift of befriending our pain. Yeah, this is a big one. In my book, Luminous Darkness, there's a whole chapter on befriending our pain for our world. I call it entering the Twilight Temple, befriending our pain in the world. And I remember as a young person having so much sort of unconscious, didn't have a place for it. Pain for the world I'd inherited, and grief for what I had experienced up until that point, and yet witnessing this world dominant paradigm of sun shining, which said, it's better to turn away from pain. Really, ultimately, the belief is that we'll be swallowed up whole by it. That's why there's so much generation upon generation upon generation of repressed pain. But the teaching in the dominant paradigm is sort of like, keep it light, keep it pleasant, don't be a downer, grief, get over it, that kind of thing. And when I first did it was just my first day-long sit, probably at the age of 18, which then quickly was a 10-day sit and a month-long sit, it was, oh my gosh, this space, which has been here within me this whole time, is all welcoming. This space welcomes light and shadow, every texture, color, shape that my psyche contains, every expression in human consciousness. When I talk about from the light to the dark and the whole spectrum in between, there's a extraordinary delusion in our world, in the human psyche, holding light as superior to dark and holding up this divide and duality when light and dark are a spectrum, a pair, living in constant interplay together through nature and consciousness. So anyway, that first time sitting, it was just, oh, I found a home where it all belongs, where my grief is welcome. And in welcoming it, the tears became teachers, and the tears showed me how full of endless love I am. And the tears showed me that these cries of pain are shared. And the tears showed me that within the pain is the medicine, the balm, but they need to be brought into consciousness, not pushed away. They need to be brought into the gentle holding of awareness. This is across the board in our practice. across the board in our practice. So when I look at our world and I see the degree of psychic numbing going on within the Kali Yuga, a million ways to distract ourselves, shiny, colorful objects and brightly lit screens and loud sounds left and right, dramas we can dig our feet in social media anytime we want, distraction. Separate from that, there is so much healing just beneath the surface, and all it needs is the simplicity of our attention. Attention is the most subtle form of love there is. We give this being attention, when we give the people and beings we are with our attention, when we give what is unfolding in our world, loving attention. Attention, okay? It always makes me happy when teaching online when I see animals come into the field, come onto the screen to join us. So welcoming any animal friends today as I see them. I see another question, another hand, and this is Reinhild. Did I say that right? Welcome. Let's see if I can hear you well.
Yeah, okay. I'm wondering about the feeling of vulnerability. And first of all, my heart goes out to you for what you went through and to all the people who experience incredible displacement. And for me, this is more like an interior thing of losing people in my life and losing places like a home where we had to sell a house, etc. And I just feel that while some years ago I still had the feeling that practice might lead me to a place where I could deal with uncertainty, several experiences of vulnerability, for instance, an injury, an accident, which left me very dependent on other people, and witnessing cancer and other diseases with people close to me, it makes my conviction, or which really accompanied me for a longer time, that my path would help me deal with challenges and uncertainties in times of collapse, etc. It really makes me feel unsure about it, because I notice how much pain and vulnerability and uncertainty inside surfaces in these situations. And I was just wondering how to deal with that feeling of foundations trembling and anxieties and fears rising, which I had thought wouldn't come up anymore because of practice, and how to maybe salvage this idea that I might be able to deal with challenges to come, for instance, also as I'm growing older in a world that is getting more challenging all the time.
Thank you. Thank you for presencing your direct experience of vulnerability, of fragility. A show of hands, how many can relate just your own experience of being a vulnerable, sensitive, sentient human being in these times, okay? The fragility of it. And I want to first present Suzuki Roshi, who brought Soto Zen to the U.S. I love Suzuki Roshi said, when you bow, bow. Sit, sit. When on a dark night, take the fetal position. Take the fetal position. For me, the fetal position is all about Kuan Yin energy. She who hears the cries of the world, the soft, soothing embrace. Part of our practice is knowing how to be, how to give ourselves to that embrace. Our practice requires, I always offer the teaching of, on one hand, gentle compassion, the soft open hand of receptivity, and on the other side, fierce compassion, the protective energy of Manjushri saying no. And so knowing how sensitive we all are, and I believe sensitivity is our greatest strength, we also have to monitor how much we're taking in. We have to monitor and attune and care for this instrument of sensitivity in order to remain of service and in equanimity on the stillness of the mountain, what is needed, because only from the stillness of the mountain can I find sacred ground in the change, and can I also be a beacon for others. Are you with me? I also want to remind us that any time we say that thing that is never going to arise again for me, that thing that I thought I was done with, you ain't done with it. You ain't done with it. And the point isn't to be done with it. It might come up. It'll come up for as long as it needs to come up. But our relationship with these things do change. My greatest spiritual teacher early on was having Lyme for 10 years. That's why I had to leave the monastery where I trained, being bit by a tick and entering mysterious illness and so vulnerable, so fragile, like showing up to teach and just to meet the day in a body. I had no idea what my physical energetic state would be each day. So vulnerable. And it was my greatest teacher. It cuts to the chase, like let anything that is not of essence drop away and go to your essence. This is it. Go to your essence. So thank you, Lawrence. Yeah. I want to fit in one more. We're going to end in a moment, but just want to call upon, if you want to even share in the chat. Actually, yeah, Lawrence, is there something briefly that you'd like to share before we close?
I think it's like you're am I getting it would be like the two the audio is really bad. So,
okay. Gotcha.
I can clean it up in one sec.
And for others, while Lawrence is doing that, and I know some people might need to drop off, we'll end in just a minute. Before all of this happened with the hurricane,
I'm cleaned up.
Already, I'm just going to share with the group, Luminous Darkness, an engaged Buddhist approach to embracing the unknown, is a really good resource for all of this, because I was writing about all of this even before my own experience of being a climate refugee, and I want to point people to that resource, okay? Lauren, all yours.
I don't know what's going on here.
Well,
hey, guys.
Here's what I would suggest. I think we should make our peace with what is, and you're totally invited to write the question, either here or just to send it to me, or a reflection you want to share. And I'm sorry we've come to that time. Okay? So, friends, really, really grateful and feeling fortified by being with you here today. Gratitude to Marnie and to Sangha Lai for all that you do. I hope to see you again. And a reminder that these teachings are offered for free, and that Dana, the spirit and practice of generosity, is what has kept feeding the passing down of these teachings for so many generations. That's an incredible thing, the spirit of generosity, okay? So you can find more about me and my offerings at deborahedentull.com. I want to dedicate the merit of our practice today to all beings across time, across space, past, present, and future, visible and invisible, seen and unseen from the human and more than human realm, especially all those who are feeling most vulnerable, fragile, and alone throughout displacement. May we remember our togetherness. Thank you, friends.